a lot of people want to know, like, how they got away with it doing this for, like, 2 or 3 years or however long. It's just, it reflects horribly on the sport. People already think it's boring. It's too long. And I don't know. It's just not good. And especially now there's all this drama with, like, them not having a bubble.
From daycare to retirement, there's always room for growth. Let's do a little growing today. My name is Ben, and this is Learn Something. Hello, what's going on, people of the internet? We're back for episode 9 of Learn Something. And we're going back to what I know and love, and if anybody knows me, it's the only thing that I'm talking about right now. We're going back to baseball, America's pastime. With me today to talk about it is my good pal, Hannah, who has been on the receiving end of just about every baseball-related conversation I've had in the last week and a half. There's a lot to talk about, so we might as well get into this. But do you want to introduce yourself to the people first?
Yeah, sure. I'm Hannah Yoshinaga. I'm going to be a sophomore at Boston University next year. I'm a big, big Dodger fan from the LA area. Love talking baseball, whether it's Dodgers or just some other team. It could be someone from the AL East all the way to the NL West. We talk about baseball pretty much on a daily basis, so I'm glad that we're going to get to record it this time and have it kind of more in this format. And I'm looking forward to discussing some of the stuff that's going on in the league right now, because there has certainly been a lot of news in the last 48 hours.
I just want to give you a little friendly nudge before we get started. You saying you're from the LA area is like the Angels saying they're from the LA area. Just saying. Just a comment.
Do you think anyone from Orange County wants to show that off right now, given what's happening in this county?
Okay, you know what? I respect it. Okay. I guess the first place that we should start, because it happened about 2.5 hours ago, is Lorenzo Cain is done for the year. He's opting out, in part, I'm sure, because the Brewers have had now 2 games postponed because the Cardinals have had 6 people test positive for the coronavirus, which we'll get into later. But as far as the Brewers are concerned, that's pretty big. That's a game changer on that team.
Yeah. Frankly, I'm not sure if they really had a great chance in the division this year anyway, just because their pitching is so weak. And they just really do not have anything in terms of their starting pitching. But that definitely sends a signal to the league if a high-profile player, relatively like Lorenzo Cain, is willing to opt out, knowing that he's probably arguably like the second or third most important player on that team.
I think part of the problem, too, with now Lorenzo Cain not playing, he was hitting well at the top of the Brewers lineup, unlike their MVP, Christian Yelich, who, as of it's Saturday that we're recording this, has gone 1-for-27. I'm not a mathematician, but not so hot. That sounds like my Little League batting average right there.
Yeah, we're seeing that with a lot of players across the league right now that I think came into the season with pretty high expectations on their plates. Cody Bellinger being another one. He and Yelich were basically in an MVP battle last season. They both haven't gotten off to a great start at all. We're seeing the same thing with George Springer, whose batting average continues to drop to even more shocking lows every single day. I mean, I think it's funny because he's an Astro, but he's going to be going into a big this is his contract year, if I remember that correctly. So this is a big season for him. It's going to be a big offseason for him as well. So even Mookie Betts, if we think about it, it took him a little while to get going. I think just when those expectations are so high, it could be difficult for the player to start hitting right away. But at a certain point, you would expect that they turn the corner like Mookie did. We haven't really seen that from Yelich yet.
And I know every single baseball pundit, whoever it may be, sports writer, radio host, TV host, whatever, every single person has said, you know, okay, not that big of a deal. People get off to slow stretches. Except this year, it is a big deal, because we've played 1/10 of the season already. And when your perennial all-star players couldn't hit a bucket of water, that's a large problem to have when you're in a sprint like this.
Yeah, exactly. And again, in the Brewers specific case, it really doesn't help the pitching to keep up with other teams anyways. Because if you're not going to hit, you certainly need your pitching to take up the bulk of the work, which is not happening for them.
So far, after most teams have played 8 or 9 games, and I say most because we'll get to the ones that haven't. There are some interesting storylines so far, which include, of all teams, the Detroit Tigers leading Major League Baseball in homers, and they're currently second, tied for second in the division. I don't have words on that, honestly. I don't even know how to think of that.
Yeah, I actually have a friend who's from the Detroit area that's a big fan, and I would just tell him and everyone else to enjoy it while it lasts. It's not going to be that way for very long. I mean, I think they've been able to jump on some teams with subpar pitching thus far, but this season is so short that we don't really know what kind of random things we're going to end up with like that. Because when you think about it, like, the Marlins are leading their division too. Like, all kinds of weird things are happening right now.
Speaking of weird things happening, the Padres, who, as we know, like to swing. There's a lot of swings. Are leading the league in walks, which, as we know, walks equate to runs, and they've scored a lot of runs, and they're 6-1 and first place in the NL West right now.
Yeah, I can tell that me picking the Diamondbacks to finish above them in the NL West this year a couple weeks ago was a really, really bad take that I'm already regretting. If the Padres can stay healthy and their bullpen can hold it together, and they could be a very good team. Championship contender, no, but playoff contender for sure.
Especially, this is something we didn't talk about that happened 25 minutes before the season started. How do you feel about Major League Baseball expanding the playoff field?
I don't really have a strong opinion on it either way. I think I have more opinions than some of the other changes they made, like the universal DH and that sort of thing. I'm not necessarily opposed to it. I think this is definitely going to open the door for in some of those more competitive divisions, like the NL West, I suppose, to some extent, but also like more like the AL West and the NL Central. I think there could be a little more excitement there. Although I do question, though, how this is going to affect some of the health issues we're seeing across the league right now, because they're already trying to limit the contact that teams are having with other players. So I don't know how throwing an extra 6 teams into the mix is really going to help that necessarily, but I think it could lead to some interesting matchups. Definitely a team like the Angels, I think, that wouldn't have a guaranteed spot at all in the normal season are going to have much more of a chance to make the playoffs now, which would be their first time in 6 years, so...
I think at surface level, I don't like that Rob Manfred did it past the 11th hour, but I think if we're going to be changing stuff this season and kind of just using it as an experimental time, I like it. I think it does make it a lot more fun, and I know there are going to be people that think that that's too many games, but I think Major League Baseball saw such a success with the postseason last year that it does make sense to expand on that and try to maximize that from a market standpoint. And I think having more teams also, you know, opens up different markets to be able to watch their teams be in the playoffs. A team like the Padres or the Angels that otherwise probably would have a lot harder of a chance to make it. All of a sudden, hey, who knows what could happen? I think March Madness, it feels like March Madness to me. I guess the NBA playoffs would be a better analogy because it's the same format, but it's like all of a sudden Dodgers open the season going 2-2 and splitting the 4-game series with the Giants. Can the Dodgers become the 1 seed and then lose 3 straight games?
It's very possible. Obviously that's not really to either one of our benefit, but I mean, really, anything is possible is the slogan of this season, whether that's good or bad.
Some other interesting things when I was prepping for this that I didn't even know. Donovan Solano, the second baseman for the Giants, is currently leading Major League Baseball in average. 458 over 24 at-bats, which is a small sample size, but it's still something. I mean, the Giants are fielding a AAA team, essentially, right now.
Yeah, that's true. We could definitely see hitters over 400 at the end of the season. I think that's extremely realistic at this point. I mean, obviously, that's not going to hold up over, like, in the history books compared to other seasons, but we could definitely have a handful of those this year. So That would be very interesting to see, especially if it's like a player like him, which I don't think it really would be. You would expect it would be someone who's been at the major league level a little bit longer, but it could again, anything is possible. It could be one, even if it's more likely not someone who belongs in AAA.
Obviously, this season is going to be looked at differently as far as record books go. But let's just say, for hypotheticals, that somebody does finish hitting 402, let's just say. And the last person to do it, Ted Williams in the 50s, I don't think I could look at somebody hitting 400 plus in 2020 and say, yeah, that guy had the best hitting season in history. Because I think if you look at sample size, you're going to have to take it as a grain of salt, and it's not going to go down and with the same significance as Ted Williams doing it.
Yeah, I'd feel the same. The only player the last couple of decades I think that would stack up to that would just be Tony Gwynn, because he was so close to getting to hitting 400. No one this year, or I think any time in the next couple of years, is gonna get anywhere near that level of prominence, I wouldn't think. That's not cheating. There's an important qualifier there, but
that's not cheating. Yeah, that is a qualifier. Some other notables here. Shane Bieber in two starts in 14 innings has 27 strikeouts, which is just blasphemous. I think the last time that was done, if I remember it right, was 1960 something.
Who is he pitching against, though? I think that's the more important question.
Yes, that is a good question. I know the second start was against the White Sox, and the first start,
oh, it was the Royals.
So, you know, not fantastic teams, but
still an accomplishment for sure.
Yeah, and especially in his first outing, he went 6 innings and had 14 strikeouts. I mean, you're getting 4 guys to hit a ball and play, and that by itself is just absolutely appalling. Another interesting thing that I've noticed, and I feel like you definitely will feel the same way on this, and I think we overinflate it because we're so close to the situation. But the Dodgers bullpen, outside of Friday night, last night against Arizona, has been spectacular.
Yeah, they've been really good. I think, again, not talking about last night because that was kind of a mess, but Trinan in particular is someone I would want to call attention to, at least up until last night. Considering he was a reclamation project that his own team, the A's, didn't even want anything to do with after 2019, I think he had a really nice start to the year. Jake McGee, kind of in the same situation, didn't have a great time with the Rockies a couple of years ago, kind of floated back to the Dodgers at the last second, a couple of days before the season was supposed to start. It's kind of nice to see those guys putting in some quality innings. Joe Kelly as well, because obviously he didn't really have a great end to last season. We don't need to talk about that. That was a pretty painful moment for most Dodger fans watching all of that go down. But it's just nice to see those guys put in some quality work, especially against the Astros. I know that Dennis Santana would probably get, and Joe Kelly would probably get a lot of credit for those wins, or at least what they did as while they were in the game during those wins. But it was just nice to see the entire bullpen kind of hold it down and keep Bregman, Altuve, and Springer 0 for 21 or whatever it was.
Pedro Baez pitched well. Kenley Jansen, who gives me heart palpitations every single time he pitches, has pitched really well so far. I mean, just the full staff, starters included, have pitched really, really well, especially without Kershaw and, throwing short innings. Buehler only threw 4 innings in his first start. And the Dodgers are currently the major league leader in ERA, which, having watched all but last night's game, doesn't surprise me whatsoever, because the pitching has been fantastic. The offense, on the other hand, has not been all that great.
For what I think is arguably the most loaded offensive lineup in at least the National League, maybe even the American League, depending on how you want to argue that, they have not done hit well at all. I can think of so many situations where specifically Cody Bellinger has had runners on like either multiple runners on or one runner on like second or third base. There's two outs, and he'll just hit some like weak little grounder. Or I don't think he struck out much, if I recall. But it's just, and that was their MVP candidate last year. Took Betts a little while to get going. Kike Hernandez had all those RBIs night one. Nothing since then. And thankfully, AJ Pollock and Corey Seager have been hitting pretty well the last couple of games. But outside of that, there hasn't been a tremendous amount of consistency, at least from the guys the Dodgers are starting every day. Obviously, it's nice to get that go-ahead home run from Rios or those kinds of things, but those aren't guys that are going to get everyday starts, at least the way things are kind of configured right now. So they really need to have some more from the guys that are going to make the lineup every day or the guys who are going to provide the best defensive upside.
And I do think, to an extent, it has to be taken with a grain of salt because, just for example, Mookie has hit the ball on the nose in pretty much every at-bat that he's put the ball in play, and he's just scorched line drives right at people, and you can only do so much about that. So I do understand that paper doesn't tell you everything, but you know, the Dodgers brand of baseball is leaving guys on base.
Yeah.
And when this team is as good as it should be, it's frustrating watching it and always seemingly leaving guys on second and third.
Yeah, and that's something we've seen from the Dodgers a lot over the last two seasons, especially in like the early parts of 2018 when like all their pitchers were injured as well and things kind of just fell apart. We saw that all the time. They were doing that last that year, leaving guys on. In 2019, it wasn't as much of an issue because I think they were overall just a better team in 2019, a little bit healthier. Obviously, that was Cody's MVP season, but we would see the same thing over and over again, and that's the kind of stuff that's going to come back to bite you, especially like Game 5 of the NLDS. Like, hate to bring that up again, but you just have to wonder, maybe we had turned in some more runs earlier, we wouldn't have been in the situation where Joe Kelly gives up the go-ahead multiple-run home run that loses on the game. At a certain point, you can't be like bullpen. You can't ask the bullpen to do every single thing if you're leaving like 10 guys on in the game.
I know people dislike Dave Roberts for bullpen usage. And I think that that's just a trend that we see in baseball in general, is a lot more of a reliance on the bullpen. But it frustrates me a little bit. And I get it. I get we're trying to protect arms. But watching people go 5 innings consistently instead of going 6 to 7 innings consistently is hard to watch, knowing that realistically they could go at least one or two more.
You're right. That is something that has kind of irked me a little bit the last several days, especially when we're told these starters are all ready to go. Like, we're told Dustin May is all ready to go. Like, that's why he's making the opening day start, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, oh, 5 innings, you're done. And then you're forcing a guy like Adam Kolarik, who spent the last however many years of his career being a lefty specialist, and you're saying like, oh, you need to take care of like 4 or 5 batters. I understand the frustration with that. I think the heavy bullpen usage, like you said, is something we're going to have to get used to. It started maybe like 3-4 years ago, and it's going to continue to happen as guys are throwing harder and all those sorts of things. But it is a little bit frustrating that we're more than a week into the season now, and several of the starters have not gone past, like, even made it through 5 innings.
Quickly, just a housekeeping thing. Obviously, this is being done over Zoom, and if there's some audio glitches, that's just part of it. The final little notable thing that's happened in the last week is Mike Trout is on paternity leave, which is so exciting. There's nothing really to say about that besides, yay, we get another little stud coming into the world.
Yeah, and also, I don't think it really makes that much of a difference if you're the Angels. Their pitching is so awful. Like, it doesn't even matter how many runs you score because the pitching staff will just give up more anyways.
That's a very good point. So, looking at the standings, some interesting things. As I mentioned earlier, Detroit tied for second at 5-3 in the AL Central. The White Sox are 3-4. The Mariners are only a half game back of the Astros at 4-4. The Marlins, technically in first place. 2-1. Technically, still in first place, though. the Cubs are absolutely obliterating every single team that they play until the bullpen almost blows every lead that they have. The Cardinals, who have had a bit of an injury bug prior to coronavirus shutting down the team momentarily, is sitting under 500 at 2-3. Milwaukee's at 500, and Cincinnati's at 2-5 and have just absolutely struggled. Meanwhile, out west in what I would have called a week and a half ago the worst division in baseball, the Padres are 6-2. Their run differential is plus 19. The Rockies are 4-2 with a run differential at plus 11. The Dodgers are 5-3 with a run differential at 18. And the Giants are sitting at 500 after a week and a half. And I just can't quite believe any of that. So you mentioned the Diamondbacks a little bit earlier. So I want to talk about the biggest boom and the biggest bust of this year so far in accordance to how you thought it was going to shake out.
Well, I mean, I think you nailed it on the head, was bringing up the Diamondbacks again, because I think they've been much worse than I thought they were going to be this year. I think the Red Sox, I didn't expect to be good, but they've been atrocious by all standards. Probably throw the Phillies in that list too. And I guess to an extent, the A's. The A's offense is not looking good at all. Their starting pitching hasn't been great. But of those four, I think when I compared my expectations of them and what I think people could realistically expect from them to how they've actually done, the Diamondbacks would have to be the worst bust thus far. For a team that made a big free agent signing by getting Bumgarner, made a big trade by getting Starling Marte, they have their record they've put up so far doesn't reflect a team that's made big acquisitions in the season with the intent of becoming a contender. Because I think realistically, if we were still in the 10-team format, you could have expected the Diamondbacks would be contending for the wild card spot. Like, I don't think anyone was saying they were going to beat the Dodgers, but it was very realistic to say they could be the wild card team. And I don't even know if they'll make the playoffs in the 16-team format the way they're playing right now.
I think for me, well, first of all, pretty much every team I said is probably not going to be great is playing the best baseball of their lives. Detroit had the first overall pick in this draft cycle, and they're playing well. I thought the Padres were going to stink it up. I thought the Rockies were going to stink it up. I counted on the Giants just being a punching bag for the Dodgers to get some wins. And meanwhile, my sleeper teams are also not doing well. I thought the White Sox were going to come out and absolutely obliterate every single team that they face, and they've been struggling. Cincinnati, same deal. I thought they were going to really surprise people in the NL Central, and they lost 2 of 3 to Detroit and then went to Detroit and lost yesterday. Also, my sleeper pick every single year that lets me down every single year is the New York Mets. I can't help but try to say the Mets are going to be good. I can't help it. That's the one team that, like, every year you just think, okay, maybe it's going to be this year. And then every year it's not.
Yeah. The Mets, it just seems like they can just never get out of their own way. No matter what they do, what trade they make, what sign they make, they're always in their own way. No one beats the Mets better than the New York Mets.
Yes. There isn't a better way to say that. Moving on to our next topic, the Astros. Oh, man. I was texting you during game one of the Dodgers-Astros series. It might have been the best night I've had since coming home from college in March. I'm going to be real honest. I think that might have been a top five, if not the number one night I've had since coming home.
It was really nice to finally see their redemption and Joe Kelly. That was just such a magical, beautiful moment. I didn't get to see the fight initially because it wasn't shown on TV until later, a couple minutes after it happened on like the feed that I was watching. But that was just such a beautiful moment in sports history. the fact that that was rewarded with an 8-game suspension, I think, is one of the worst things that Rob Manfred has done to me, which is quite a laundry list of things.
So for anybody that lives under a rock, in February, the Astros got quote-unquote punished for quite literally cheating and, in some cases, ruining careers by stealing signs through having a camera in center field pick up signs that relayed it to a computer monitor in the dugout, and then based on the pitch call, someone in the dugout tunnel would bang a trash can. The Dodgers probably would have won the 2017 World Series had they not done it. The Red Sox probably had a chance at winning the 2017 World Series had they not done that. And I say that specifically because Joe Kelly wasn't on the Dodgers in 2017 when it happened. He was on the Red Sox. So there was still skin in the game. And that's something that I saw on Twitter, that people were saying, oh, Joe Kelly wasn't on the team, why does he care? Well, first of all, everybody cares, because when you cheat in baseball like that, you're not only cheating the teams that you beat, you're cheating everybody that plays the game the right way.
Yeah, that was just one of the worst offenses, I think, that's been committed in sports, period. Considering it was going on for so long as well.
And so the problem with that, and the reason so many people, fans and players alike, took so much offense to it, is as a way to get the truth, Major League Baseball granted any players that came forward immunity from any sort of league punishment, which meant nobody got fined, nobody got suspended, and baseball did not take kindly to that, as they shouldn't. As we talked about a little bit earlier, George Springer, Jose Altuve, and Alex Bregman, who are all on that team, have hit, respectively, 3 for 25, 4 for 27, and 5 for 28 so far this year. And it was to the point where Orel Hershiser, who does color commentary on the Dodgers broadcasts, said after Jose Altuve struck out, quote, "Guessing is a lot harder than knowing. It has infiltrated every single level and every single space in the baseball sphere that it possibly could."
Yeah, that's just such a bad look for the sport, too, considering that the talk around baseball for several years now, probably starting with the strike in 94, and then the whole drug scandal, the first one being in like the 90s. Well, actually, no, it was all the same, kind of like mid-2000s era. It's just such bad looks for the sport that's already starting to, I think, in most people's eyes, get passed up by the NBA, which was the up-and-comer for so many years when baseball was so much more popular, like 70s, 80s. So now that they've got this cheating scandal that's gone largely unpunished, that a lot of people want to know, like, how they got away with it doing this for, like, 2 or 3 years or however long, it reflects horribly on the sport. People already think it's boring, it's too long, and I don't know, it's just not good. And especially now there's all this drama with, like, them not having a bubble, like, spread of coronavirus in different clubhouses. Just all of it doesn't work well.
We'll get to that, but I want to go back to Joe Kelly and finish up. If anybody didn't see what happened in game one of a 2-game series, Dodgers at Houston, Joe Kelly comes in, and Joe Kelly is known for not only being a fiery type personality, but also not having the best command of his pitches ever, which included breaking a window at his house during quarantine while he was throwing. Joe Kelly starts off the inning by throwing 3 straight balls to Alex Bregman, probably decidedly thinking, all right, well, I'm not going to get him here, let me do something productive, throws one up behind his head. Whether it was on purpose or not, we're never going to know, but it doesn't really matter. With 2 outs, with Carlos Correa hitting, first ball over his head. Second one comes in, and after Correa strikes out, and as Joe Kelly is walking off the mound and Correa's chirping at him, Joe Kelly says something that I will not repeat on this podcast, and then proceeds to make pouty faces at him which ensued a benches clearing yelling match. It might have been the greatest sports moment I've ever seen on TV, and it was cathartic for millions of people.
Yeah, it just made me laugh because every time I get into my dad and I will like start roasting each other or whatever in the house, and we always make those like little pouty faces at each other, just like kind of like almost like kind of sarcastically. So just to see Joe Kelly do the same thing to the sports team that I hate more than any other sports franchise ever, it's just so great to see on TV. Again, like the fact that was rewarded with an 8-game suspension is so ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. And for anyone wondering, 8 games in this 60-game season is equivalent to 22 games. And I talked to an Astros fan after the fact who was not happy with Joe Kelly for throwing at their players. But baseball's always been a game to police itself. And everybody knew it was coming. It was going to happen at some point. And Joe Kelly just had to be the sacrificial lamb to step up and say, all right, it'll be me, I'll do it. And he got praised like he was an Avenger on social media. The world lit up and came to back up Joe Kelly in a way that I have not seen a baseball player get treated in a while.
Yeah, I'm glad that like those really like harsh indictments of Joe Kelly were not coming from that many people. Like it was really only Astro fans that supported that ban. Like it was nice to see everyone else come together and just realize how like stupid that punishment is.
These are just two quotes that I got from Twitter from two different columnists. The first one says, "Thank you, Joe Kelly, from us all." The second one says, "Joe Kelly just went over the city of Los Angeles." Joe Kelly is going to go down history as one of the greatest Dodgers ever to put on the uniform solely because he got revenge for all of us. It wasn't just the 2017 Dodgers that were affected by this. And I think that's something very important to talk about, that yes, baseball is just a game, but we have our emotions in it. We care about it. Millions of people care about baseball regardless of the team, but especially for Dodgers fans, it was like you were so close and then you lost. And you know what? In 2017, I was like, okay, if the Dodgers aren't going to win, I'm glad it was Houston. Houston had just gone through a hurricane, the city was reeling, and it was really good for the city to rebound with something like this. But now 2 years later, after we've all kind of come to terms with it, all of a sudden we find out they cheated their way there, and it was not only heartbreaking, but just angering to an extent that I don't know if I've ever felt when it has to do with baseball.
Yeah, I remember having similar thoughts around the time. I was like, well, like obviously I would want the Dodgers to win, but, you know, Houston's been through a lot. Their city kind of rebounded, and this is just like the championship is just a symbol of that. So it was very frustrating to obviously change, a perspective change a little bit this year. And it's just a real shame that that was something dirty behind the scenes going on the entire time.
One last comment on this matter. Suck it, Astros fans. We deserve that. Okay, so now to the most important thing that we're going to talk about. Baseball, the Marlins, the Cards, trying to deal with coronavirus right now, which I understand that we are talking about this in a very fortunate and privileged way, because honestly, having any sports whatsoever at a time like this in our country is a blessing, and I think that should be recognized. But it's not looking so hot right now. It's really not.
Yeah, I think that I'm not sure the college sports will happen at all, but the NFL especially, who have like so many millions or maybe even like billions of dollars invested in this season happening, they should really be taking note of what's happening in MLB now, because baseball is like arguably like the least contact of the major, like involves the least contact of the major sports. And for them, not having a bubble is like slowly unfolding into a bit of a disaster. I don't know how the NFL thinks that they're going to pull off a season using a similar strategy to what MLB did when there's so much contact involved in that.
So just the cliff notes of what's gone on in the league so far. prior to opening day, the Washington Nationals superstar in the making, Juan Soto, was the first player to test positive and go on the coronavirus watch list, I guess is what it's called. At the time, I was like, okay, that's one off. It's going to happen. And no other Nationals players were infected, and the impact was minimal. Outside of wins, of course. But then on, I think it was Tuesday, they came out that there were 6 Marlins players that had tested positive while they were in Philly and had played the day before while people that were on the field were positive tests, which is obviously a huge problem. Since then, it's gotten even worse. The Marlins now have 18 players on their 30-man roster that have tested positive and 2 coaches. And they, as we speak, are currently en route to Miami from Philadelphia for Lord knows how long. The Marlins, as an organization, are shut down at least until Sunday, which is tomorrow for us right now. It forced the Phillies to postpone their series against the Yankees because the entire Phillies team needed to be quarantined until they could get negative tests. And thankfully, none of them tested positive. The Orioles were supposed to play the Marlins in Miami, and that got changed to then the Orioles going to New York to play the Yankees. And from the reports that I've seen, the Marlins outbreak has stemmed from players going to a club in Philly, which is disastrous for Major League Baseball, disastrous for the Marlins, and disastrous for sports in general, because it shows that you really need to do basically what the NBA is doing and take them away from the rest of society for this to have a fighting chance.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone listening has been watching Matisse Thybulle or JaVale McGee's vlogs inside the NBA bubble. I really like Matisse Thybulle. That's a side note. But anyways, you can see in their vlogs, like, the NBA has taken so much time to plan this out, to coordinate the extensive testing, quarantine processes, all this stuff, just to make sure that they can have a season. And I think most people reasonably may expect the season to complete for the NBA. It's similar things for the NHL's bubble and the MLS bubble. It really just makes you, it looks so bad for baseball that they have players going to a club. I mean, here's an analogy, when Lou Williams went to the club and left the NBA bubble, they slapped him with a 10-day quarantine, and it was like an embarrassment to his entire team. That's not happening with MLB. Even if they have one little, like, compliance officer, like, whatever their strategy is for mitigating this problem, one compliance officer cannot watch a team of that has, like, 60 players, and it's, like, camp or whatever, 30 in their, like, separate camp away from their main site, 30 on the major league team. There's just no way you can monitor that at all time. And if you watch those NBA vlogs, there are people everywhere to make sure that the health, like, precautions are being taken.
And now, in the last 2 days, 6 people in the traveling party on the Cardinals have also tested positive. There have been 2 games that have been postponed thus far. Who knows if there will be more? And the report that I saw was that it stemmed from players going to a casino. And now anybody that knows St. Louis as adequately as I do, because I have to fly out of there whenever I come home or go back to school, is that there's a casino about 25 minutes outside of the city, and Missouri is just hemorrhaging bad decisions around coronavirus. So the fact that the casino is open in the first place is another thing that doesn't need to be talked about. But to have major league players be so irresponsible as to go do that when they know it can jeopardize their team is also atrocious looking for baseball.
We haven't seen many players actually stand up and take initiative to say, like, I'm not going to, like, go party outside of the thing. I'm going to wear my mask and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, actually, just yesterday, something came out from Justin Turner. The Dodgers had decided they're going to be wearing surgical masks in the dugout. Any players that don't need to play in the dugout are going to sit in the stand. Same for the bullpen. Hitting coaches will not be there when they're on defense. Vice versa for pitching coaches. Very few players, I think, have taken the initiative to say that. So it's almost not even surprising you're seeing things like the Cardinals going to a casino, or the Marlins going to a nightclub, or, like, to the hotel, or things like that. And I'm kind of glad that Rob Manfred kind of stood up yesterday and said, the season's getting canceled if this keeps going. Like, this is not going to work. Because clearly it wasn't going to be a player that stepped out and told the entire league they needed to get their stuff together. Because that's just not how it works.
And we are blaming the players here, but the players are not completely at fault, because it needs to be also be an institutional decision to, like, really, really watch over your guys. But even so, I think the way that baseball went about coming back is a lot of the reason why this was allowed to happen. Because while an institutional Major League Baseball fumbled the bag, to say the least, when it came to preparation for things like this, MLBPA was not going to let them play in a bubble. And that's where problem stems from.
Yeah, I think we can trace so many of these things back to those, like, disastrous negotiations that were happening for however many months. Because I know the big storyline, obviously, around that time was, like, oh, like, this side's greedy for this reason, that side's greedy for another reason. Like, this is so, like, tone deaf and insensitive when there's a global pandemic going on and, like, a big crisis of people trying to support Black Lives Matter and, like, anti-racism, and they need to bring things into the air. So, like, that was the narrative then. But now we're kind of seeing the things that weren't getting talked about then. Like, the fact that these health protocols that they were pushing were really not that all that comprehensive. So even these players, like, as much as, like, some of these players are being irresponsible, allowed by the rules that were agreed upon by the MLBPA and the league. So this is kind of the other side to those earlier negotiations that we're starting to see now.
And look, I get that players don't want to be away from their families. We've seen other leagues do it. They could have just sucked it up and done it. And I know that's easier said than done, but if that's what they want to do to play baseball, yes. That being said, I think it's a lot harder to operate in a bubble with baseball purely because, number one, it's played almost exclusively outside. And number two, there's no time limit. And I think those two things present a huge challenge compared to the NBA, where you have a rough estimate of the amount of time it's going to take to play a game. And same with the MLS and same with the NHL. But with baseball, we saw the Dodgers and the Astros play a 5-hour game 2 days ago. And when you're trying to plan out games like that, it's almost impossible to be able to have, let's say, 4 games in a day play on the same field, purely because you don't know how long the first one's going to take, unless you want to impose time limits on a Major League Baseball game, which is not going to happen.
Yeah, that's another issue as well. Plus, they'd really have to set up, like, 3 bubbles, one for each region that would be playing one another. Yeah, it's hard to see it happening. Like, I think it's much more realistic they just cancel the season before they make any attempt to set up a bubble. Because it took, even the NBA, as comprehensive as it is, it took them forever to come up with that plan and to put everything in. Like, even just 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were still seeing things, like, ideas being executed finally in the bubble that they had, that were talked about in the past.
Yeah, and I think one more thing about why the baseball bubble, in my opinion, wouldn't have worked in the first place is because, like I said, you play outside as opposed to, well, I guess the MLS plays outside also, but you're playing outside. And when you think about if there were to be MLB bubbles, you're thinking, okay, it's going to be Phoenix and Florida. You're not playing outside in Phoenix and having more than one game at a time. You're going to play one night game. It's going to start after 8 p.m. because that's literally the only time it's going to be cool enough to play. And that's just not going to work. You're not going to have 7 games going on at one time. That's too chaotic for television. It's too chaotic for replay. It's too chaotic for everybody. That's part of the problem. And the other problem is that then it gets into, all right, well, then the leagues get shuffled because, for example, in the NL Central, the Cubs, Reds and Brewers all have camps in Arizona, and the Cardinals and Pirates have camps in Florida. And that presents a whole other can of worms when it comes to setting up bubbles like that.
Yeah, there would just be so many financial things that would come up with a bubble. I know, like, the NBA's bubble was, what, like, over $100 million? Like, the MLB owners are never going to cough up that kind of money. I just think that's not the mindset of MLB owners. I mean, I couldn't really go into the specifics of why the NBA was fine with that and MLB isn't. I think it's just a culture thing. But Yeah, I don't know. You're right. There are many reasons why the bubble wouldn't have worked. Like, in a perfect world, in a vacuum, yeah, bubble would be the solution to get the season done. But there are just so many logistical issues with that.
So from what we've seen, if we do play out the rest of the season, which knock on wood we do, because I don't know what I'd do in my life without baseball after we got it back. If you had to pick World Series teams, not a winner, just World Series teams, who do you think?
Well,
you can say the Dodgers. It's fine.
Well, I know, I'm gonna pick the Dodgers. I just don't know if I want to be basic and say Yankees for the AL team. My head says Yankees, but heart says maybe the Rays.
I said the Dodgers last year, and obviously we saw how that turned out. So I do have a little bit of pause in that, but I think the Dodgers, just purely based off of experience and stability in being as good as they've been, will continue to be really good. And so I will pick the Dodgers out of the National League. And yeah, I think if the Yankees stay healthy, I don't think there's a single team in baseball, maybe besides the Dodgers, that will be able to hang with them on a consistent basis, at least.
Yeah, it's just, they're kind of like the Mets, though, except that their problem is injuries. Like, no one beats the Yankees better than the Yankees with the injuries. I have a friend who's a Nats fan who, like, when that during that series was joking that it's too bad the Nats couldn't play the Yankees in 2 weeks because half the roster would be on the IL. That's been the story with them for so many years, like, or like so many times these last couple of years. So that's a question mark.
And the crazy thing is that the Yankees took the Astros to 7 games with a team of lightning in the bottles that are now playing significant roles on this 2020 team too. So we'll have to see.
Yeah.
In this last little bit, I want to talk. You and I talked about this a couple days ago, but I want to bring it up on here because I finished it last night. So I just finished reading The Bullpen Gospels by Dirk Hayhurst. And my, oh my, it was it's the best baseball book that I've ever read. No competition. Moneyball is fantastic. And that would have been my best baseball book that I've read otherwise. But this book is so good for anybody that enjoys baseball as a community and as a society, I guess would be a word to describe it. And more than just a game where there's 9 guys on a field, read this book. It's incredible. I know you don't read that much, but I think you would like it too.
Well, we'll put that on the list once I finish the other like 5 books that I started in the last however many years that I just never finished.
That's how I've always been too. I don't know if I've talked about that on here. I talk about books so much, but up until quarantine started, I could not finish a book for my life. I either got busy, I got impatient, or something happened and I just dropped it and never picked it back up. I have now read 12 books in the last 4 months, which is nuts.
Yeah, quarantine has definitely given, I think, everyone a lot of time to pick up some new hobbies, whether it's like reading, doing something else. I've picked up some new exercise stuff over the quarantine. It's kind of filled my time, but lots of time to read during this, like, the school semester, especially if there's no MLB season, which would be horrible, but.
Yeah. Do you have any last thoughts that you want to get off your chest while we're still here?
No, but I really hope there's a way to salvage the baseball season, because it'd be a real shame after all those negotiations that went on, all the uncertainty about whether the season would be played, and especially now that the season has started. It'd be real, real shame if it had to be canned now.
Yeah, I agree. My last soapbox before we sign off here is to continue wearing masks. And remember that we vote in 3 months now, so be on the lookout. There are a lot of primaries coming up. Missouri's primary is August 4th. Yeah, please vote. Please, 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 please vote. And I don't know how many college kids are listening to this. I know we're all going back to college. Please don't be stupid and ruin it for the rest of us. I get it. Hannah and I both get it. But realize that your actions are affecting more than just you. For the love of Pete, please. That's all I ask. I don't want to be afraid to go to class because we have to go to class.
I agree with all of that.
That's all we got, and we'll be back next week for the last episode of season one of Learn Something. It's so exciting. It's been 9 episodes.
Well, thank you for having me on. This was really fun. I like to talk baseball with anyone who's willing to talk to me about it.
Yeah, especially when we talk about it about 3 times a day, at least. It's nice to actually do it vocally and not just texting.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you for tuning into the Learn Something podcast. If you want to keep up with the podcast on Instagram, it's @LearnSomethingPod. Subscribe to the podcast so that you can keep up and get episodes right to your phone when another one drops. I hope you learned something, and we'll see you next time. The intro and outro music is written by Noah Kurchowski.